Welcome to Couples Therapy in 7 Words. I am your co-host, Judy Alexander, and I'm here with my husband, Dr. Bruce Chalmer.
Well, hello, Judy, and hello, listeners. And this particular episode is, I think, very timely. Well, I suppose I could say it would have been timely for quite a while now, unfortunately. The title is...
Surviving the Pandemic. Can we stand this much togetherness?
Indeed. And you know, I've been asked about this by some folks who listen to the podcast. You know, gee, you should do something on this. And I realize in my practice, going back now, how long are we into this pandemic as of the time of this recording? About 9 months, I think?
Yeah, 10 months,
Ten months, is it? Yeah, it's been a while. And the as of this recording, the vaccine is brand new. It's just been the Pfizer vaccine has been approved, and they're about to approve the Moderna vaccine. So that kind of gives you a sense of where we're recording this in December of 2020. And it's going to be a while, what all the experts are saying. It's going to be quite a while before we can relax about this pandemic. So this has come up a great deal in my practice. I see it with lots of folks. So that's going to be our topic for today. But before we do that, first of all, we'd like to ask you to spread the word about our podcast. And our listenership has been increasing, which is really delightful. And of course, we'd like to increase it even further. So of course, tell your friends about it, but also do the things that people do to spread the word on social media. You can comment and rate us on wherever you get your podcast. You can subscribe to the podcast. Again, how you do that depends on the particular platform from which you're getting the podcast. Sometimes it's subscribe. Sometimes I think it's follow. In any case, do that, and that'll help people find the show. So before we get into our topic for today, we are going to pause for a commercial break. The commercial is, in fact, for a book that I wrote. So we'll be right back after the commercial with our discussion of the topic of the day. So this podcast is based on a book that I wrote called Reigniting the Spark: Why Stable Relationships Lose Intimacy and How to Get It Back. And we'd like to share with you a review. We've been getting lots of great reviews of the book, and this is a pretty recent one from Melissa Burgess. She happens to be from Buffalo, New York, which is where I grew up. We don't know each other. We're in different generations altogether, but I was just delighted to see somebody from Buffalo reviewing the book. So Judy, why don't you read an excerpt from that review?
Sure. This book is a valuable read for anyone. I think the title implies that it's only for people who are in unstable relationships, who are having problems, etc. But I took a lot of value from this book despite the fact I am in a stable relationship. After all, none of us are perfect. There's always room for growth and improvement in our relationships, and we should always be working on them. Don't get complacent.
Well, thank you, Melissa, for that review. And you know, it takes me back to a conversation I had, I think I mentioned it in another episode, with my publisher when he had first accepted the book for publication. And we were talking about the title, and he was pointing out, you know, I wanted to call it the title of this podcast, Couples Therapy in 7 Words, because that's what it's based on. It's based on that formula. And he said, no, you should do this, make it be broader, because this isn't just of interest to people who are in therapy. This is of interest to anybody who might want to improve their relationship. And, you know, Melissa's pointing out that even the title as it is might imply it's only if you're having trouble. And she noted, having read the book, that no, actually, it's for anybody. Mm-hmm. You might have a fine relationship, but, you know.
And that's what several of the reviewers have pointed out as well, that it's not just for people who are having trouble in their relationships, that it's for people who just want to, you know, give a little spark, you know, give a little boost to their relationships.
Exactly. So again, the title of the book is...
Reigniting the Spark: Why Stable Relationships Lose Intimacy and How to Get It Back.
And it's available anywhere books are sold. It's available as paperback. It's available as a Kindle version on Amazon. And it's also available as an audiobook from Audible. So any of those media, I hope you'll get the book and read it and send us your comments as well. And now back to our episode. So, Our topic today, as we said earlier, is surviving the pandemic. And, you know, can we stand this much togetherness? So, you know, I was thinking when we were putting together this episode, just as a way of structuring it, that there's really, I mean, one way of looking at it, there's three different things we need to deal with in terms of surviving the pandemic. It all has to do one way or another with fear, I suppose. Mm-hmm. But the three topics I think we can talk about are, first of all, dealing with our own fears. In other words, as individuals, you know, we all have our own fears around this. So how do you deal with that? And then dealing with differences in how each of the members of a couple manages their fears, because that can spark all kinds of difficulties and conflicts. And then finally, just plain old dealing with enforced togetherness. You know, so many people, unfortunately, were laid off from work, so they're kind of stuck at home, and you're not supposed to go anywhere and, you know, be with other people. So there's a lot of enforced togetherness, or people who are working from home, and people trying to deal with kids, and there's a lot of that stuff. So let's start with the first part of that, dealing with our own fears. Judy, what do you remember in terms of your own, you know, how have you handled this?
Well, I think we've pretty much been isolating from the start. You know, all of our biggest fears was getting this disease, and at first we knew nothing about it and heard that people were dying from something that there was no cure for. So I think our tendency in the beginning was just to stay inside and not go out any place. As mm-hmm. you recall, we were both working, and then you were looking at the numbers and you said, this doesn't look good. And I run a school, and I just said, we're not meeting today. That's it. And we shut down and took a week to figure out what to do, and went up on Zoom the following week. But yeah, that was my fear, that you or I or somebody we knew was going to come down with COVID, and we just didn't know how to handle it.
Yeah.
How about you?
Well, you know, it. I should just, for our listeners' sake, let them know we're both in our 60s. I'm in my late 60s and you're in your early to mid 60s. And so, you know, certainly me, because I'm 6 years older than you, we're particularly susceptible, I suppose. So I think that increased our fears. We, of course, in our family, our kids are on their own, not living with us, but several of our kids ended up getting it. In fact, in one case, one of our kids got it before anybody even knew about it. He got it in February. He only found out later that he, you know, had the mm-hmm. antibodies for it. And one of our daughters-in-law was very sick with it. Thank God everybody turned out okay. But it was very scary mm-hmm. back then. And indeed, we are also, I should mention, both very fortunate in that we are both able to work from home. I've started doing all of my sessions by telehealth. You know, and it's funny, I had no idea that that was going to be it for my office mm-hmm. When we shut down. And then I subsequently decided I'm just going to do telehealth from here on out. And you were able to run your school, you know, by Zoom with all of the difficulties. Oh boy. I'm just imagining so many of our...
Don't get me started.
Yeah, don't, exactly. Don't ask. I'm imagining so many of our listeners are just nodding, especially the ones who have school-age kids. Well, I hear about this from your folks I work with all the time, just mm-hmm. how difficult that is. Mm-hmm. And just getting back to the idea of fears, you know, I remember, I think I even commented on you with it. You know, I was sort of monitoring my own gut a lot of the time. And early on, it was terrifying to go to the grocery store. This was, you know, pre-mask days when there were, you know. And boy, I think I was more worried about that than you were.
You certainly were when you have dealing with differences and how each of us manages our fears. Mm-hmm. I can say it now. I thought you were a little bit excessive
uh-huh.
yeah. with spraying every package that came out of that grocery bag.
Yes, there was that.
We had the gloves on and we were washing all the time and like... let's just say I thought it was a bit excessive.
Yeah.
But, you know, I went along with it because I saw that it was upsetting to you.
Which, you know, that's we're kind of morphing into the second issue. How do we deal with differences mm-hmm. and how each of us manages our fears? I will say with respect to was it over the top or not, it sure seems to have been with hindsight.
Right.
At the time, I wasn't at all sure it was over the top. You know, there were all these... people talking about how important it was to, you know, how long would it, the virus live on surfaces and things like that. But I remember commenting as things went on and as more was known about it and as people started wearing masks and all that stuff, I remember saying, you know, it was interesting. My gut isn't as worried about it anymore. Mm-hmm. And that was, of course, during the summer. We live in Vermont, and the rate here during the summer was very low. There were very few additional cases. Now, fall and winter, there's been another spike here, but it's still not as bad as it is in much of the country. But we did have some differences mm-hmm. in how. And I think you just said something, Judy, that really is a key factor, because you were feeling that my reactions were somewhat over the top, but you also were compassionate about that. You know, mm-hmm. you didn't make an issue with me about it. You just accommodated to it.
Right.
I suppose had I been worse, is that a way of saying it? That there might have been some limit to that, you know, if I had really been freaking out? I don't know. What do you think?
I don't know. That's a good question. I saw that you were obviously very scared, and I didn't want to add to those fears by not taking the cautionary measures. Mm. Literally, I was coming in the house and we were wiping down every single item and we were changing grocery bags. You know, that remember because we use our own bags, but back then they said you can't use bags. So we were coming home with all those plastic bags. And first of all, only one of us was going shopping, and it was like every 2 weeks. So, mm-hmm. you know, we're loading up. So we've got like 20 bags of groceries and walking in the door. And as soon as you walk in the door, you take off your shoes, you wash your hands, mm-hmm. you get out the sanitary wipes, which I might point out were hard to find, but luckily we happened to have a lot in our house.
Yeah.
And, you know, wiping down every single item that came out of a package, you were spraying the mail.
Yes, I was spraying the mail. I remember that, yes.
Spraying it with Lysol, which I thought was a little excessive, but mm-hmm. I saw how scared you were, so I didn't want to add to your fears by defying you and saying, oh, you're crazy.
Well, and you know what I find is interesting, and here I'm thinking of numbers of couples that I've worked with. Again, on the topic of fears, you were really sweet about accommodating my fear. And one of the things that made that more possible for us than might be, because I've talked with couples about this, if my fear had caused you to, had threatened your livelihood or threatened our livelihood, it would have been a different thing. You know, if you were running, let's say, a restaurant, I've worked with several couples actually where they are involved in the restaurant business. Mm-hmm. And my fear was so intense that I was saying, you can't go there. You have to shut down your business, more than the guidelines even say, perhaps, because I'm too afraid. That would trigger your fears of, well, what am I going to do to make a living? And I've seen that happen between couples where, you know, they have different points of view on what's safe and what isn't. And it's not, you know, it's not so easy to accommodate by just saying, well, I'll be nice because, you know, you're afraid and I don't want to make you more afraid.
Right.
It's like, no, if I were saying, no, you can't run your school, you know, if you were still meeting in person or something, I'm mm-hmm. saying, no, you're doing your job to the best of your, you know, of your judgment is still too threatening for me. That would be a serious problem. And I see that happen in a lot of couples.
Yeah, I know of couples where one is works in the medical field, and mm-hmm. She is staying in a different place than her family mm-hmm. Because of those fears. I think she since moved back with the family. But in the beginning, you know, when, like we said, nobody knew, she was not living with the family.
Yeah. Well, and again, there's an example of a couple that I don't know who you're referring to, but they figured it out. You know, they agreed on that. Mm-hmm. And so it wasn't necessarily a marital issue.
No, it wasn't a marital issue at all. It was a safety issue. She was an anesthesiologist. So.
Yeah. But on the other hand, I know lots of couples where it becomes a marital issue because they don't agree on that. Mm-hmm. So one might be thinking, you can't come home. And the other's thinking, how can you tell me I can't come home? I think I'm being safe. You're just being too sensitive. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a difficulty. And then there's the third. So that's, you know, dealing with differences in how each person manages their fears. And the third thing is just, you know, never mind the differences in the pandemic. What about people who are just stuck at home with each other? And I say stuck at home because for some couples, that can be really hard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, too much togetherness.
Yeah.
Sometimes that is not always healthy for all couples.
This reminds me of that saying, you know, when they people talk about at retirement, you know, for better or for worse, but not for lunch. You know that one?
No, I never heard that one.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's stereotypically, it's when the man retires mm-hmm. and the woman's been at home mm-hmm. and all of a sudden he's underfoot.
Yeah.
And, you know, and he doesn't know what to do with himself. And so he's, you know, hanging on her. And she is thinking, I used to have a nice life here. and I love my husband, but not all the time. You know,
yeah,
it's like.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So how do you find that your couples are dealing with that?
Well, you know, it depends a lot on how they're doing in general. So, you know, the couples that I hear about this being especially acute is where they were already having a lot of difficulty with each other. And the fact that they weren't together all the time let them more or less ignore it. But being together all the time, they stopped being able to ignore it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that has, you know, numbers of people who first contacted me actually during this pandemic, you know, over the last, 9, 10 months, did that because they could no longer ignore the problems they were already having. And conversely, I did note, especially early on in the pandemic, I noted that some couples that I had been working with for a while who were making progress surprised themselves by doing so well.
Mm.
You know, it's like, well, they realized this is a crisis. You know, there's nothing like a common enemy to make people work together.
Mm-hmm.
And the enemy being the pandemic, you know, the fear. And they were able to find that they could work together very well. And again, so some of the couples were surprised about it. They said, you know, we came to see you because we were having trouble and we seem to be doing better now, not worse, which is sort of interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we did see that somewhat.
Well, we happen to have a letter from one of our listeners on this topic.
So, Judy, read the letter.
Yes. So, Kirsten writes, Dear Dr. Chalmer, I am writing because I am at the end of my rope. I am sure you hear this from other couples and families, especially during COVID. Mike and I have been married for 20 years. We have a 12 and a 10-year-old son and daughter. Mike is a consultant and I am a graphic designer. Until COVID hit, Mike did a lot of traveling for his job, and I've always worked out of a home office. Now Mike is working from home all the time. At first, it was a matter of adjusting to having him around. It was difficult for all of us because it disrupted our routines. I was used to working my job, taking care of the kids in house, and doing the shopping and cooking and laundry. I want to say my kids are usually a big help, but now with their dad around all the time, they have taken to staying in their rooms a lot and aren't as helpful as they used to be. Mike is always underfoot and he criticizes everything, my housekeeping, my child rearing, what I'm cooking. And to top it all off, we disagree on what social distancing means. I say it means we don't go out and we don't go into anyone's homes. Our children do go to school and I feel that in itself is enough. Mike, on the other hand, drops by our neighbors' homes for a cup of coffee and has gone out a few times for drinks with his buddies. I know he needs this time, but I am very cautious about being around people. And now, here comes the worst. We had planned to spend Christmas here at home with just the four of us. Now, Mike tells me he invited his brother and his wife here with their 3-year-old. They live 5 hours away and will need to spend the night. He tells me they are isolating this week in order to come here. I don't even want to celebrate Christmas this year. I just want to crawl under a rock until all of this is over. I honestly don't know what to do anymore with Mike. I thought I knew him, but I'm seeing someone totally different from the man I married. I am ready to pull the plug on this marriage unless you can convince me otherwise. Can you?
Wow.
Oh, there is so much going on with Kirsten and Mike.
There is indeed. Yeah. Wow. You know, something that caught me as you were reading that, there's kind of multi, as you said, there's a lot of things going on. There's multiple things. The thing that caught me especially is it's not just that they're together a lot and have to adjust to that. And she said, at first, you know, it's a matter of adjusting, and that can be difficult enough. But he criticizes everything.
Mm. He hadn't been around. He didn't see what she was doing before. So she's used to doing things a certain way, and he probably has a different way of, or a different style of doing things, but because he didn't have to do it, you know, she was the one doing it. It's not his way.
Yeah, no, that is, you know, it's interesting because what I was guessing was you picked up on an angle I hadn't thought of, because what I was guessing was, I'll bet he's been always critical. In other words, I bet this is one of those things that's been there in their relationship, whether they knew it or not. And what you just pointed out is maybe there wasn't that much opportunity for him to be critical because he wasn't around when those things were happening.
Mm-hmm.
But his tendency to be critical, at least as she's experiencing it, is problematic, you know, sort of independently of the fact that there happens to be a lot of opportunity to it for it now, you know?
Yeah.
Criticism. Yeah. I'm the John Gottman stuff. I don't know if I must have mentioned John Gottman sometime in this, in one of our episodes. He's a guy out in Seattle who's been studying couples for decades. And one of the things he talks about is how damaging criticism is. Criticism as opposed to simply offering a different opinion. You know, when somebody says you're doing it wrong.
Mm-hmm.
In a close relationship, it is not predictive of success, and that's kind of what the pandemic seems to have brought out for this couple.
Okay, I'm reading like this huge subtext into poor Mike. She doesn't say if it's compromised his income at all, but you have to believe it might have.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, for this is a guy who's used to going traveling all the time. He's not used to being in the house. And because his wife and kids have pretty much been running the house, he's kind of, what's the word I'm looking for?
Disempowered? I don't know.
Maybe
sure.
That's it. I don't know. Maybe, yeah. maybe, I don't know if disempowered is the right word. Maybe it is.
Kind of on the outside looking in.
Yeah. It's like, what is my point here? What is my purpose other than like bringing home the bacon type of thing?
Mm-hmm.
And maybe I'm not doing that. So he's stuck at home with his wife and kids. And this is a guy who probably was staying in 5-star hotels and going out to nice restaurants all the time and schmoozing with the colleagues and having meetings and feeling really important. And now he's feeling redundant almost. So he doesn't have his work colleagues. He doesn't have, you know, he's not feeling like a big shot anymore,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I think it might be pretty bruising to his ego. So the only thing he has is, you know, to pick on the poor wife and kids.
Well, that is, I have to say, just such an impressive level of empathy you are showing there. I really, you know, because I look at this and I'll bet this is my bias. It's, I don't know how you can analyze this bias of mine, but, you know, I'm always acutely aware when I'm working with couples that I happen to be a man, right? I'm coming from a guy point of view, and everything you just said so resonated with me. I don't know that I would have come up with this, you know, without your help.
Mm.
I don't know that I would have come up with this right away, that level of empathy for Mike. I was feeling this sense of, oh, here goes this guy, and he's being critical, and it's like, oh, we men just need to learn to stop being such jerks to our wives. Do you know what I mean? That's where I was going with this.
Mm.
And you just pointed out something I think is really important. And indeed, you know, if I were working with this couple and I wasn't able to come up with what you just came up with, I'd have a much harder time connecting with both of them.
Mm-hmm.
I'd have a harder time connecting with Mike because I would probably be feeling critical of him, ironically. And I'd have a harder time connecting with Kirsten because she'd be consulting me. You know, she's written this letter.
Right.
She says she's at the end of her rope, but
yeah,
she only wrote the letter because she actually wants to save her marriage.
Yeah.
Or at least a lot of her wants to. So, you know, that is just so interesting. What's called for here is empathy.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, you just showed a lot toward Mike.
Yeah, I think it's first, you know, we were talking about, you know, managing our fears. There's a lot going on here with, in addition to the fact that they're together all the time and Mike's possible loss of income and certainly his loss of social status. But again, she's talking about the way that they handle this social isolation. And, you know, again, getting back to the empathy for Mike, here's a guy, again, he's out on the road. He's got a lot of schmoozing going on. He's not getting that at home. Mm-hmm. And his wife, you know, Kirsten, she can't be expected to fulfill that for him. So I'm going to make a suggestion. I know we don't usually suggest things.
Oh, go for it. And you know, it's funny. I want to put that in context. I often tell people in sessions, it's like, hey, I don't want to tell you what to do. And even if I did that, you know, obviously I don't have the power to tell you what to do. But here's a suggestion. So go for it.
Yeah, that they set up some type of couples visiting nights with friends, you know, that they have some Zoom cocktail parties. Mm-hmm. I know that those are pretty popular, and I've had quite a few myself with my friends. And it's, while it's not really as much fun as being there in person, but here's a guy that probably needs that social outlet. If mm-hmm. he's dropping by his neighbors for coffee and going out to bars with his drinking buddies, there are other ways that he can do that without actually being there with them. So if she doesn't want to go to the neighbors for a cup of coffee, you know, 8, 9 in the morning before you go to work, set up something in advance with mm-hmm. one of your neighbors and say, let's have coffee together this morning, the yeah. four of us, you know.
Now, of course, what that requires of Mike is that he not dismiss Kirsten's fears. Mm. You see what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I'm remembering back, like relating it to our experience again. I remember one time you went and played Mahjong with your friends. I guess it was outside.
It was outside,
and, you know,
yes.
But I was horrified.
I remember.
Yeah, right? It's like, I was like, oh my God.
And I think we were horrified too and never did it again after that.
Well, yeah, and that's my point. The fact that you were horrified too, you know, when you thought about it,
yeah,
of course, meant that we didn't have to have a conflict about it. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? It's like, no, we actually ended up agreeing on that. It's not like we had to work out a disagreement. Mm-hmm. But what if we hadn't? You know, what if yeah. my fear were keeping you from something really dear to you.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what you're saying is perhaps happening with Mike. It's like her fears are keeping him from something that he just needs.
Yeah.
And your suggestion, of course, is something that is in the form of, well, here's a way that you can take care of both of you. But that's really contingent on Mike not trivializing Kirsten's fears.
Yeah, well, I think they need to sit down and have a really honest conversation about what's going on with both of them and what their fears are and lay it all out, because I don't get the impression from this that they actually have talked about it. You know, yeah. I guess, you know, you get so busy and so used to living with things that it just keeps piling up. So I think they really need to sit down with each other and have an honest conversation about, look, this is what's going on with me. Mm-hmm. And I need to hear what's going on with you and just let the other one talk and get it all out there.
Yeah. And well, of course, in the terms that I talk about a lot in the book, what you're just describing is an intimate conversation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they both show up and they're willing to be honest and they're willing to hear the other person be honest. And there's anxiety connected with that. But they're going to have to somehow tolerate that without panicking and, you know, getting into a fight about it. And that requires that you tolerate the anxiety of intimacy. That's what that's all about.
Mm-hmm.
So that sounds like a great suggestion.
And I think they also need to bring the kids into the conversation, because it sounds like the kids are shutting out their dad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if they're taking to their rooms because they don't want to hear his, you know, probably his tirades, you know, and he's probably critical of them too.
Mm.
So we need to get the air cleared with mom, dad, and the kids.
Yeah.
And they're old enough at 10 and 12 to, like she said, they were helpful before. They're probably good kids and they're probably just tuning everything out.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, now is a time when they could be doing so much more together rather than separating. And, you know, whether they have a family game night or just say, you know, tonight is the night we're not going to be looking at our TVs, our phones, our, you know, computers, whatever it is, we're going to play together, whether it's video games or board games or just cooking.
So, Kirsten, I hope that helps you. And we've generated some ideas here, and I hope you can find a way to make them your own.
Yeah, we don't want you to pull the plug on your marriage.
Mm, yep.
So let us know how things go. So, if you have any questions, much like Kirsten had here. We would love to hear from you, and also topics like the topic of this show came from a listener suggestion. So if you have those, please email us. You can send your email to bruce@brucechalmer.com or visit brucechalmer.com.
And when you visit brucechalmer.com, if you migrate over to the podcast tab, you will see there that we are also looking for people to interview on the program. If you look back through our past episodes, we've had some really great interviews with some very interesting folks. And we would like you to suggest other people to interview, and that could include yourself. And in fact, there's a way right there on that tab that you can suggest a time. You know, you can sign up for a time for us to interview you. And when you do that, you'll be asked, gee, what would you like us to interview you about? And that's how we'll know if you'd be a good fit for the show. So please do that. So Judy, tell us about some of the upcoming topics we're going to have on the show.
Okay, so we have marriage versus living together and other topics, especially if you suggest them.
So please give us some suggestions. And now another word from our sponsor. And our sponsor is the book that I wrote, which is called
Reigniting the Spark: Why Stable Relationships Lose Intimacy and How to Get It Back.
And we're going to share with you another of the wonderful reviews we've been getting for this book. This one is from Pamela Thibodeau. And Judy, why don't you read an excerpt from what she wrote?
Filled with true accounts from his many years as a psychologist working with couples, Dr. Chalmer offers 14 chapters of sound, solid advice on keeping the love and commitment alive in your relationship. My now deceased spouse of 20 years and I had a relationship many only dream of. We maintain the spark with many of the same methods Dr. Chalmer outlines in his book, so it greatly resonated with me.
Well, thank you, Pamela Thibodeau, for that. And, you know, I actually wrote to her when she sent this and offered my sympathies for her loss. But it's very sweet and sad when I hear from someone who had a wonderful relationship, and that, you know, and reading the book, it resonated with them because they said, yeah, this is what wonderful relationships are about. Mm-hmm. So it was really sweet to get that particular review. Of course, we would like you to get a hold of the book yourself. You can do that anywhere books are sold. You can go to, you know, the big ones like Amazon or Barnes & Noble and whatever. If you go to Amazon, you can get it in Kindle form as well as on paper and also as an Audible book. And we would ask you when you do that, if you would review it yourself, especially on Amazon. That's sort of how people find books these days. And of course, you can send us your comments as well, and we'd love to hear from you. So this podcast is based on the book we just talked about. And of course, the name of the podcast is Couples Therapy in 7 Words. And the 7 words are
be kind, don't panic, and have faith.
And that, if you are wondering more about that, you can always go back and listen to our first episode where we talk specifically about those 7 words and how they fit together. But what we'd like you to do in terms of this podcast is let other people know about it. So please subscribe to the podcast on whatever medium you use to get it, and also tell your friends, and also comment and rate us, because that helps us pop up higher in the search algorithms. So until next time,
remember, be kind,
don't panic,
and have faith.